This is the Mashable Art of Self-Care, a podcast where we offer a community and safe space to bring awareness, educate, empower, and advocate on the ways that we can break the stigma of self-care for mothers. This is Anita by Wallace, your host. Welcome. Good morning, or hello, good day, whatever time it is that you're listening to this episode. I want to apologize for the lateness of this episode. I usually release it on Mondays, or at least like first thing Monday morning. But I'm in the Bay Area, and if you've been listening to the news, California, or at least the electric company in California, most parts of California, especially Northern California, they have shut off power. So I haven't had power since Saturday night, and so I'm not recording this at my house, which I usually do, and I totally forgot to bring my microphone and all of my other stuff. So I'm at my husband's studio right now. So I apologize for the sound quality if it doesn't sound the same as to what you're listening to. But I wanted to do an episode today on self-care practices gone wrong. So it's been a while since I've done one of these, and talking about anxiety. And why I bring the subject up is I most recently, last week, for those of you who've been following for a while, I graduated from physical therapy school. And part of that process is getting licensed, and so having to take a board exam. So anyone who's ever taken any type of licensing exam knows how stressful that is. And it was a 5-hour test. I took it last Thursday. That week leading up to it, there was just a lot of anxiety about what to expect. And then, you know, the day before, the night before, all those feelings of anxiety, just, you know, that pit in my stomach, the butterflies, just that feeling of nervousness. And then the day of the exam, the morning of the exam, you know, then getting there, you know, sitting in front of the computer about to start the test. And then pretty much I thought it would die down. But then, you know, I would say that anxious feeling pretty much almost stayed throughout the entire exam, just because I want to get the answers right and all of that. And my mind is racing and wanting to make sure that I'm answering all the questions and I'm staying, you know, keeping track of my time and everything. And then I would say like, oh, okay, well, now that I've taken the test, then, you know, that anxious feeling would just leave. And it hasn't. I would actually say it's dissipated tremendously compared to what it was last Thursday. But I don't have the results yet. I won't get the results until either Wednesday or Thursday of this week. So after the exam, I was just an absolute mess. And then even the next day afterwards, and a lot of this is what I'll be talking about, but it's such a interesting emotion that takes place. And I would say that for a long time, I never really considered what I had. You know, I never really called it a name. I never really called it anxiety. I just was like nervousness. And so I'll talk a little bit about that. And that I think, and why I'm calling this a self-care practice gone wrong, is because I want to highlight anxiety and talk about it and have an understanding that, yes, it definitely deals with mental health as well. And that I think in most cases with any type of mental health issues, especially anxiety or depression, you just want it to go away. You know, you don't want to have to deal with it. And that if you feel that if you are able to get rid of it, it goes away, then things are just going to be better. But I want to be able to discuss and talk about why, in a way, it can be needed and how it can actually be a really important tool as well. And so to not see getting rid of an emotion, or at least to acknowledge it, that it is an emotion, or that getting rid of it is actually good for your self-care. So I want to start off with a definition. So just, you know, going on Google, basic Google search definition of anxiety. So it's a feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease, typically about an imminent event or something with an uncertain outcome. And I would say for sure that all of what I felt last week and other times when I've had any type of anxious feelings was definitely, you know, that feeling of worry, nervousness, you know, sense of unease, you know, about an event that, you know, is about to happen or that will be happening, and then not being sure about what the outcome of that event is going to be. And so, like I mentioned, you know, last week was a huge one for me with the exam. And then the other one, so October's just been a very, I would say, like, heavy emotional month. The week before that, my daughter went through a dental procedure. And because she is four right now, and going to the dentist is not a very pleasant experience for her, and for them to do the dental work that they needed to do, they would have to put her, they had to put her under general anesthesia. And so being a mom, and also myself having gone through general anesthesia, you know, once before, was just really frightening, like thinking of like my daughter having to be put under and like asleep and having them do all this work, you know, in her mouth. And, you know, just, I think for me, when I went through my own surgery, was that sense of like that time lost, and like that anything could happen to you during that time when you're just asleep and you're not unaware. And I think that also is just really scary, of not being in control, you know, at that moment. You're, you know, you're entrusting your body, your life with these doctors and anesthesiologists. And I think that was a big sense of worry for me when my daughter went through that dental procedure, then having this test, you know, the following week. So I feel like it was just like anxiety piled on top of anxiety. And I would say that, yes, I am an anxious person. I have actually like defined that. Yes, I have anxiety. As I mentioned earlier, I never really considered anxiety as a part of who I am. I just thought it was just, you know, always nervousness. And yeah, I just always thought it was just nerves. And especially I remember being in school and, you know, before a test, or I performed on stage, and just like, oh, it was just butterflies, it's just nervousness. But, you know, as I've gone older and looked at lots of situations that I've been in, like, yeah, that's anxiety. And that is an emotion that I have and that I hold, and that I should acknowledge and not try to, you know, wish it away, or I shouldn't be nervous, or, you know, trying to figure out some way in order to not feel that way. Because for me, I felt that I shouldn't feel this way. Other people are able to do whatever it is that they need to do in their life. And well, assumingly, they can do all these things in their life and they never show any sense of nervousness. And I remember when around the time that, you know, I met my husband, and, you know, we were still dating, and whatever event it was that was happening. And, you know, I mentioned about how nervous I was, and he said, like, oh, that's a good thing. You know, it shows, you know, that you're excited about it. It shows that, you know, you're ready, that you're prepared, that, you know, you're looking forward to it. And I never really saw it in that way. And that, yeah, that actually, that, you know, that anxiety, that sense of nervousness is like, you know, you're really excited. And it's been nice just to be able to kind of flip that, that sense or that definition of anxiety, instead of it just always be about worry or about unease or about nervousness or uncertainty, to also see it as, you know, being excited about, you know, something that's going to be happening to you or something that you're going to be doing. And yeah, it's normal to kind of be a little bit uncertain, but excited and, you know, really revved up, you know, about wanting to do a really good job, whatever that may be. So, but with regards to it being a self-care practice, I think that many people, with myself included, you know, just would not acknowledge it, would just wish it away. And not acknowledge, you know, that it's a feeling or emotion, because we assumed that it would just make us feel worse, or that, it, you know, that negative emotion was bad for us. And I think even when people think of depression, you know, you want to get rid of, most people want to get rid of depression. They don't want to be depressed. They want to, you know, be in a lighter mood or be happy. And I think maybe anxiety, depression gets kind of lumped together, even though they are in a way somewhat separate. They are somewhat different emotions, definitive emotions. So I don't think that it's necessarily something that has always been truly accepted. And I think it is becoming more and more accepted, and there's more definitions around it. And you know, as I was doing a little bit of some research around this, and because this podcast, and been doing some work around who I want my target audience and who I really want to be speaking to, and it's really to mothers and the term of postpartum anxiety. And so I'll talk about that a little bit later. So, and there's some websites also that I looked at, and I'll make sure that I tag them in the show notes. And so, yeah, I think just having an understanding and a clear definition that, yes, anxiety is an emotion, and it also helps to keep us alive. In a way, it's kind of similar to stress, you know, that we have stress in our lives, and it's that fight or flight emotion, and that we have anxiety, and that makes us nervous, and it makes us, you know, kind of a little bit more on edge, again, excited. And that, yes, we need to have that in order to help keep us alive, you know, because we're uncertain of, we were thinking of, like, back in the day when we were having to try to survive out in the wild, that we're uncertain of, you know, who's going to come and attack us, or, you know, where we're going to get our food the next day, you know. So you need to have a little bit of that stress, a little bit of that anxiety, in order to make sure that you're, you know, just always on top of things, that, you know, you're aware of your surroundings, and not necessarily that we need to have those same type of feelings, because we live in a more modern world, and we don't need to always be on high alert all the time. But I think that having those anxious emotions, you know, whether it's about to present, you know, do a presentation, or about to go on stage, or about to take a test, that in a way, you know, we need that. Like, that's what, I'm going to say high alert, but it's just like, that's what's going to keep us on top of our game. It's going to make sure that we're doing our best, that we're performing our best, that we're at our best. So I think that having a reframe of how we see anxiety, I think, is going to be the best self-care that you can really give to yourself. And again, just acknowledging that it is an emotion, just like happiness and sadness are emotions, anxiety is an emotion as well. And not to just categorize it as a disorder, which is unfortunate, you know, because there is anxiety disorder, and then see it as, oh, it's a bad thing, or it's a negative thing, it's a disorder, and something that I need to fix, I need to take care of. And yes, there are higher levels of anxiety, and that might warrant, you know, medication or something in order to make sure that you're at your baseline. But I think in general, for a majority of individuals, we have a low level of anxiety. And I think that it can be something that can be looked at, again, reframed in a different way, instead of something that we want to get rid of. So when we worry about threats, things that can harm us, we want to be prepared. And so I mentioned about the different types of anxiety. So there's the mild anxiety. So we want to ensure that you don't make a mistake before a presentation, and then it subsides afterwards. Whereas, like, high levels or anxiety disorders I mentioned earlier, is where it stays with you even after the event or the work that you did, and then it can end up disrupting your life, where it is that you're not eating, you're not sleeping well. So, you know, in those cases, I think that if it is, you know, having such a negative impact on your life, then yes, where you might want to have, you know, talk to someone or have it treated. But again, I think in general, for most of the population, we're dealing with, you know, mild levels of anxiety. And then also, just to kind of tie back on the high levels of anxiety, that in the way that it can disrupt your life. And I think, there can also be that sense of impending doom or death, you know, that can also occur, or that people will think of, that if, something doesn't work out in a particular way, then it's like, it's the end, like, that's the end of their life, or, you know, nothing else will matter. And I think that there should be that clear distinction as to, you know, when we're talking about high levels of anxiety or just mild or low level anxiety. So I want to jump into postpartum anxiety. So something that I mentioned earlier, and as I was looking into this, I saw that there is postpartum anxiety, and there is, I want to say, like, a definition or actual term for this, just as there is postpartum depression, or, you know, perinatal mood disorder is also another term that's used for moms who are just recovering from having given birth, and then dealing with whether it's, you know, the postpartum blues or just basic, you know, a depressed mood after having given birth. But the thing is that it doesn't have as much attention as postpartum depression has been given. So there's definitely a level of anxiety that comes with being a new mom, and obviously all the stress that comes with adjusting to a new life. So some of the symptoms that are seen, and this is from whattoexpect.com, some of the symptoms that they mention is like that sense of dread, a sense of danger, racing thoughts, excessive worry about the baby's safety, health or development. You're stressed about being a really good parent. You're always on edge, always agitated, even suffering from insomnia, even though you're tired. So really, really tired, obviously, from being, you know, a new parent, but then unable to sleep. There can be an increase in the heart rate and breathing, and all of this can also be accompanied with panic attacks. And so these feelings, you know, can definitely be a lot more intense than some of the normal worries that new parents might go through. So I think, again, something to be aware of, you know, where there's that mild level of anxiety and then high levels. Same thing with postpartum anxiety, that, you know, I think I could say that I had, you know, maybe most of these feelings, you know, I was always, especially the first, you know, first month, you know, I was always afraid of, you know, anything happening to my daughter, and, you know, worried about her all the time and making sure like she's eating enough and she's sleeping enough and not wanting her to get sick. And, you know, I would say I wasn't always on edge, but there's definitely that worry, that constant worry. And I don't think that ever goes away as a parent. I mean, my daughter's going to be 5 in just a few days, and I still worry, you know, like now she goes to school and I still worry because there's so many things that could happen and that are going on in the world. So I think you're always going to be constantly faced as a parent with some level of worry. But I think when it gets tipped, you know, the scale gets tipped, where it's, again, that impending sense of doom that, you know, you're always constantly on edge, then where it starts to affect your physiology, where, you know, a faster heart rate, faster breathing, you know, again, then that's going to even go into stress levels as well, too. So higher levels of cortisol, and, you know, then that's even, you know, worse, like just how cortisol really has a damaging effect on the body if you're constantly producing cortisol all the time because you're always under stress. So I think just something to be aware of, that there is that difference, but also that having anxiety as a new parent is normal as well. So there was a recent article in the New York Times that actually came out this month, so this October of 2019, where they looked at postpartum depression and anxiety affecting 25% of mothers within the first year of childbirth, and with over 57% of them breastfeeding as well at the 6-month mark. So more nursing mothers are suffering from postpartum mood disorder. And one of the interesting things about the article, and I'll link it in the show notes, was that because more women are breastfeeding, so they said that 57% of women in general are breastfeeding after having given birth, but then a majority of them are also suffering from some type of postpartum mood disorder, so whether that can be depression, that could be anxiety, that they're afraid to go and take any type of medication. And so because they want to breastfeed for as long as possible, and just the dynamic relationship of that their mood disorder is so bad that they have to take medication. So then they'll stop breastfeeding because they're afraid that the medication will, you know, go through the breast milk and affect their baby. And so then how that's also, you know, cutting off the amount of time that moms are actually breastfeeding, where, you know, there's obviously the encouragement of trying to at least go 6 months, you know, or longer, and cutting off that part, that relationship, you know, with their baby at a month or even 2 months. Or that they're sacrificing taking care of their self-care, taking care of their mental health in order to take care of their baby via breastfeeding. And then how that's having a negative impact on the mother. Again, you know, there has to be, the mom also needs to be taken care of in order for her to really take care of the baby. So it's a very, very interesting article. So I'll make sure I include that in the show notes. But how, Yeah, I mean, that has, I think, you know, again, you have that level of anxiety of wanting to take care of your kid, but then, you know, you can't take care of yourself, or you're just not in that mental space for yourself. And then you're worried about your baby and how that just like is a cataclysm of just big issues for sure. So how does anxiety affect the body? So I already mentioned, you know, that at least it can have an increase in heart rates. It can increase respiratory rate, so your breathing. And then there's also lots of other psychological impacts as well. But one of the things is that when your body is exposed to more cortisol, which is a stress hormone, then that can cause a myriad of problems in the long term. As I mentioned, rapid heart rate, also palpitations. Can have chest pain, obviously, because the heart is working a little bit more. So you might be getting some pain in the chest. And that's going to increase the likelihood over time of having hypertension or some type of heart disease. And again, this is having a constant overload of cortisol over a long period of time. So not just like there's one stressful event, but if you're pretty much putting yourself into a stressful environment, you know, every day for the last 5 years, then yeah, you're definitely going to have some physiological impact. Digestive issues also tends to be a big thing. So there'll be a loss of appetite. IBS, or irritable bowel syndrome, has also been linked to anxiety disorders. And so your immune system can also be affected. So it can be weakened, and then it's going to make other medical conditions a lot worse, or whatever medical conditions you have, allow them to be a lot worse, and then you're just more susceptible to, you know, any type of illness because your immune system is weakened. And again, that's just the impact of cortisol, how that affects the body. So where do we go from here? So I've already spent some time talking about what anxiety is, you know, given a clinical definition of anxiety, talking about the different levels of anxiety that can occur, and then also how anxiety can also have an impact on new mothers, and then also some of the physiological effects and how anxiety, stress can impact us, you know, physiologically. So whether our heart, our immune system, our digestive system. But what can we do from here? And, you know, if I'm talking about anxiety being seen as an emotion that we can actually tailor, you know, for our use, you know, how can we actually use this emotion to better our lives, you know, or to, you know, provide a positive impact in what it is that we're trying to do? And I would say that the first thing that you want to do is acknowledge that you have it and accept it as a natural emotion to have. So if it causes you to cry, then I think you want to stay in that. If it causes you to binge watch, you know, I think that's okay, but I think it's also important not to stay there. And to come back to my experience, you know, from last week, I think that was huge. And it was just very, it was fortuitous that I decided to, you know, talk about anxiety and me having some big anxious moments in this past month. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, yes, this is an emotion, this is a feeling that I'm experiencing right now, and knowing that, okay, this is not a place where I want to stay. And I think it's okay to have that one day, you know, or even several hours of just feeling really shitty and feeling like, you know, I'm a bad person, or like I didn't study enough, or I didn't do well enough, or, you know, again, just even shifting it. And I'll talk about that. But yeah, I think it's okay to have those feelings, to cry, to be upset with yourself, whatever it is that you need to do. But I think it's important that we don't stay in those places, because that's where then I think then we can kind of take a deep dive into, you know, really sinking even further into that anxiety or into that depression. Breathing, I think, is really huge. So again, the anxiety is going to encourage that really rapid rate of breathing, you know, where some people might even like start to hyperventilate just because of that nervousness if it gets that bad. But when we can regulate our breathing, so whether you do something as simple as,
you know, just taking a longer exhale than your inhale. You don't need to be a meditator. You don't need to go to a special yoga class in order to learn how to breathe more effectively, in order to allow your parasympathetic nervous system to downregulate. So when we are able to tap into our breathing and allow it to slow down, again, that part of our nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system, is allowed to go and take over. And when you take those deeper breaths, then that's also going to just be sending a message to your body in order to allow, instead of, you know, fight or flight and always on guard and on edge, to actually allow our bodies to rest. So breathing, again, something as simple as, you know, allowing your exhale to be a little bit longer than your inhalation can be one way. And that was huge for me, especially when my daughter was going through her surgery. Like, the two things that I kept telling myself was, okay, I want to, you know, stay calm. That was my mantra, was to stay calm and breathe. And, you know, when I was starting to feel those anxious feelings, I just told myself, like, you know, stay calm and just breathe. And that helped me and just kind of brought me back to a more saner place rather than being all up in my head. Going outside, so there's so much research around the effects of forest bathing and just being out in nature, being among the trees, being among, you know, natural environments. And just go outside and just go for a walk. And again, that is pretty much, that's like nature's medicine, is just, you know, to be out there and to get that good dose of nature. Helps to release endorphins, especially when you're going out for a walk. So it's a natural high that you can get rather than, you know, obviously drugs. And that can also counter a lot of the negative, you know, impact that anxiety can have on you. So definitely going outside, breathing some fresh air, being among nature. And if you don't have access to, you know, going to a forest or going out into the woods or going to the beach, even if it's just, you know, down your block, hopefully there are some trees there, and then you have the sunlight, you release the breeze on your skin, and you can, you know, breathe in the cold air, the cool air, whatever it is. And that can be, you know, just enough in order to kind of help to bring your anxiety down. Another thing also is sleep. So I think sleep, as I mentioned, for postpartum anxiety, that insomnia can be a really big thing that some mothers might deal with, especially when they're so tired. And I'm not going to say that this is an easy answer, because I know it wasn't an easy answer for me, just like, oh, just go get more sleep. And becomes like a bigger issue of, okay, well, how do we support a mom in making sure that she can get enough sleep? And so that might be, you know, a matter of her needing to go and get support or getting help, you know, from her partner or other people in her community or her friends. But I think when you can be able to target, you know, your sleep and how much sleep you're getting, hopefully getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep, you know, a day, then that can make such a big difference in your anxiety levels. And I could speak for myself, just going through this past month, really prioritizing sleep and making sure that I got 7 to 8 hours, that I was off of my phone, that I, you know, did not have any access to technology at least 30 minutes before I went to bed, and use that time before bed, you know, to either, you know, read a book, to move my body, you know, spend time with my partner, you know, soak in the hot tub, you know, before I went to bed. And that was just, you know, got me into a much better space for me, you know, to go to sleep. So that's something I would definitely recommend if you're able to, if you have the ability, even if it's just 15 or 20 minutes without being stimulated, your nervous system being stimulated. And then you can at least just allow your brain just to kind of stay in a much calmer, much more peaceful space before going off to sleep. And then it should hopefully make sleeping a lot easier. Again, not saying that it's super easy. I know that there's going to be a lot of other compounding parts, you know, to making sure that happens, but something definitely you want to be looking at. I would also say looking at challenging your anxious thoughts. So again, just, you know, using myself as an example, but that was huge for me last week after taking my test, and I was just down. I was just in a very, very bad space for half of the day last week after the exam, and it wasn't until, you know, I talked to my family, and, you know, I'll talk about, you know, obviously wanting to reach out to others, but after talking to my family and getting to be outside and spending time with my daughter and really thinking about it, and actually it was while I was going for a walk and really thinking like, okay, well, what's the worst that could happen if I fail this exam? I just take it again. Like, I mean, it's not going to be the end of my ability to get licensed as a physical therapist. I'm hoping that, you know, still have my fingers crossed, but, you know, if things don't turn out the way that I hope, that hopefully the job where I have a job waiting for me will still wait for me, you know, but nothing really bad's going to happen. Like, I just then, I take the test again, which is in 3 months, and I give myself more time to study, which unfortunately sucks, you know, to have to study more instead of getting to start working and do the work that I want to do. But nothing bad is really going to happen. So I think it's important to whatever anxious thought you have to challenge it. So a lot of worries, and there's so many what ifs, you know, it can spur on anxiety and make it a lot worse. So when you can ask yourself those questions, or when those questions pop up, and then ask yourself those challenging questions, it's like, what's the worst that could happen, you know, to come up with an answer or solution of what it is that you would do, you know, that there are ways that a lot of things, it's not the end of the world, it's not going to be impending doom or death for us if it doesn't work out the way it's supposed to, maybe a cause of embarrassment, or, you know, you have to do extra work, whatever it is, but I don't think that in a lot of cases, it's going to be, you know, be the death of us if we don't get something the way that we want it to happen, the way that we want it to. As I mentioned, you know, just staying connected, reaching out to others, you know, hopefully that you have a network of support, people that you can talk to, you know, who can help support you and who can be your saving grace, especially when you're in those really tumultuous tumultuous parts of your life where, you know, you really need to be able to talk to someone when you're feeling anxious or when you need help. So that's another thing that, you know, you can do or make sure that you have in place, especially after whatever that event is, you know, that you can reach out to them right away and let them know, this is how I'm feeling. I'm feeling really crappy. I just want you to listen to me. And then lastly, having some mantras or, you know, affirmations or just positive self-talk. Like, I think, and you might have heard this before, that, you know, the things that we say to ourselves, we would never say to our best friend. And it's really amazing the things that we do say to ourselves. And again, just flipping that switch, you know, having that positive self-talk instead of saying like, wow, like I'm a terrible test taker, or like I did such a crappy job, or, you know, I'm the worst at this, you know, can you turn it around? Can you say like, wow, like that was really hard, but I'm really proud of myself for having gone through this, you know, because it was really, really hard. Or I'm proud of myself for going on stage and performing, you know, that song, even though it was really, really hard. Or, you know, I'm really successful at this. You know, I don't see myself as a failure. I'm not a failure. You know, I made this attempt and I was successful at it, you know, whether it was good or bad, but I still see it as a success because I did it. So it's really, again, reframing, having that positive self-talk. All of that, I think, can be really important tools. And again, it's from a website that I found and added a little bit of my own. But having some of these tools in place, especially if you know you're one who tends to run with anxiety a lot, to have these tools in place to set yourself up for success. So that way you're not in, you're not stuck. You're not stuck in that constant mind trap of, you know, spiraling down into like, what's the worst that could happen? And like all the what ifs and just making yourself even more and more anxious. So I'm hoping that today's episode at least helped to highlight this particular emotion or thing that, you know, you might have experienced, or maybe you know someone who experiences anxiety a lot, and that you can be able to provide some wisdom, you know, to them. So I want to just thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Masterful Art of Self-Care. If you are wanting to listen to more interviews, inspiring stories from men and women like myself who are bringing the neglected and seldom talked about parts of our body to the forefront of self-care, would love for you to consider subscribing to our channel on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or Spotify. So if you have an interesting story to share, why don't you send us an email at tia@themasterfulartofselfcare, or you can direct message me at selfcarephysio on Instagram. If you like what you hear, consider supporting this podcast. So you can always visit the link on the show notes to make a donation. There are also a lot of new things happening, and I want you to stay in the know. So consider signing up for our monthly newsletter that is available to you to read up on upcoming podcast episodes, blog posts, and also learn about self-care and its relevancy through other healthcare disciplines. And all of that's available at themasterfulartofselfcare.com, where you can sign up. So let's help make self-care more accessible and down-to-earth for mothers. Thank you again for listening.